It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. Backpacking with a baby makes more sense than it might seem. For one thing, babies don't weigh all that much. Today, we're going to be talking with moms, three moms who have recently gone to the backcountry with their infants on the Chilkoot and Resurrection Pass trails, and a pediatrician who's done some of this kind of stuff and has detailed advice on how to prepare and what she's learned from her own trips. This is a great way of having fun in Alaska and raising resilient backcountry kids, hauling them off in a backpack. I've done it more on a boat, but by whatever means you choose, you can still take your babies into the backcountry. You don't have to be held back when you become a parent. And my first guest today has recently done this in sort of a classic way. The Chilkoot Pass Trail is the kind of the original trail into Alaska by the Gold Rush. And I bet very few of those prospectors, those stampeders, were carrying babies. But my guest, Heather Helzer, was. She's a triathlon coach. She has a business called Turnigan Training. And within the last month or so, she went over the Chilkoot Trail with her baby. And what's your baby's name?
Yeah, so hi, my name is Heather. So my son is Finch. He was 10 and a half months old when we hiked the Chilkoot Trail. Our permits were for August 14th to the 17th from Skagway, Alaska, up and over the pass to Bennett, Canada. Uh-huh.
And you have gotten quite a bit of attention for this, but it wasn't something you set out to do to, like, make a point, right? You just wanted to go on a backpacking trip.
That's exactly right, yeah. So really, all the outdoors things are things that I did prior to having a kid. I've been backpacking since I was 19. When I was a freshman in college, my college professor said, you have to do something that makes you uncomfortable as an assignment, and you have to write about it. And so my project that I did is I went backpacking and I wrote about it. And since then, it's just kind of built. And that's one of the reasons why I moved to Alaska, is because I loved the mountains and wanted that adventure. So,
and this is your first child?
Yes, this is my first child.
So you went through this adjustment. I'm pregnant now. I can't do much. Now I've got a baby. Yeah. I can't do
no,
much.
No, no, no. I did stuff still when we were pregnant. I hiked to Fox Creek Cabin on the Resurrection Pass, 31 weeks pregnant. My husband ran the Resurrection 100. And so at mile 14 and a half of the Resurrection Pass 100, I hiked all this. I hiked 36 bags of potato chips and gummy bears and Gatorade, and I filtered water there at the creek, and I made a makeshift aid station for the runners that they didn't know about because the race director forgot to mention. So,
and here's a pregnant woman out here in the middle of the road.
Yeah, I did have support from that.
Okay.
For helping get me there. Three good friends helped me.
But this one over the Chilkoot was just solo. And,
yes.
And that was really because, as is often happens for anybody who's organizing trips with their friends, your friends kind of crapped out on you and didn't.
They did. Yeah. So I had 11 people on a list that were interested in joining me, and all 11 just couldn't commit in January, and that's when the permits had to be filled, and they sold out. Two friends asked me in February if they could join, and I said sure, but I'm doing it solely by myself. Like, I don't want any help, but you can join me and join. Uh-huh. You know, have fun with me. But this is me being able to carry and prove it to my own self that I can do it. And they called and they couldn't get a permit in February. So, yeah.
Yeah, so that the Chilkoot Trail is limited in how many people can go over it by a permitting system that the Canadians run, which is actually a really good idea, because otherwise I think it would be way too many people. And it's pretty, you know, it's plenty of people as it is.
Yeah, so that was one thing that was very disappointing. So in my head, and, you know, I told all my family, they are all worried about me doing this trip by myself. Everybody was worried about me but my husband. My husband loves the mountains, and he knows that I'm competent, and he trusts my skills as a hiker, backpacker, and a parent. So, but I kept saying to all my family that live on the lower 48, don't worry, there's 50 people out on the trail. Mm-hmm. And then I showed up to pick up my permit that day, and the people that were leaving the trailhead the day that I was, there was only 11 of us, and I was stressed out.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because so in all—
Because you wanted there to be a little bit of a safety net.
I did, yes. Yeah, so all, you know, I got a lot of criticism in the newspaper about people thinking that I was irresponsible, but from the get-go, I am not one to do things by myself either, you know? I wanted that comfort, and I'm very outgoing, so I had full intentions on, you know, embracing that 50 people community, being mm-hmm. outgoing and just kind of grabbing onto other groups and being social and, you know, having that assistance if I needed to go to the bathroom to like be like, mm-hmm. hey, can you hold my kid? But so the first day, there was only 11 people, 11 others, and they went to Canyon City. And so they only were going 7.5 miles, and I was going 13 miles to sheep camp. Mm-hmm. And so I knew that I was going 6 miles by myself.
Right.
Or 5.5. And so I was very stressed out. And I almost bailed on my plans when I got to Canyon City. I was very nervous. But, you know, I just sucked it up and was like, this is our plan. We got to go. And I'm an ultra marathon runner, and I literally tried to slow jog when I could because I wanted it to be done. And mm-hmm. I just screamed, "Hey bear," like a gazillion times. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
So, that was one of the things that I felt when I did it was that actually each camp had quite a few people in it.
Were
so there's a community out there.
It really is.
And were they supportive as you'd hoped?
Oh yeah. So that was the awesome thing that I literally got there. And I just started crying when I got to sheep camp. There was 37 people at sheep camp.
Oh, wow.
So literally, it just was a bad luck of the draw that the day that I started, you know, only 11 people of the 50 showed up, you know? And so, but the day ahead of me, so I guess it's normal.
You caught up with those folks,
yeah. So I guess it's normal to only hike to Canyon City. Of course, I was like, oh, 13 miles, that's no big deal.
I'm kind of with you, though, in terms of the distances, because those camps are pretty close together.
Right.
They're well, pretty short
yeah,
days.
And I kept trying to sell it to the other group. I was like, come on, it's like 1:30 in the afternoon. You don't want to stop hiking. You want to keep going with me, right? And they were all like, no, we have a plan. We got to stick to it. And because, you know, it's all about coordinating with the train. And I was like, I guarantee there's going to be spots on that train for you. You can take my seat and I'll stand, you know. And they just were adamant that they had to stick to their plan. So
the toughest day of this hike, obviously, is going over the pass, over those big boulders.
Yeah.
And I guess earlier in the year when it's snowy, it might be even a little easier because the cracks between the boulders are covered. But you're going in August. And in August, it's steep and there are great big boulders. And if you have a fear of heights, you're probably going to have a little bit of uneasiness. And you have a 10-month-old baby strapped to you.
Yeah.
So tell me about that part.
Yeah. So so we were so lucky. So the first day, first of all, it was really rainy. It was got enough foliage that I didn't need to have my raincoat on. So I just had like a synthetic, my Gold Nugget triathlon t-shirt is actually what I wore. And then the second day, it was beautiful. And we got so lucky because that pass can be real treacherous. I can't mm-hmm. imagine. You know, everybody explains like fog socked in and rain. And I can't even imagine what those rocks would have been like. But we got really lucky and it was pretty clear and the sun came out for a little bit. But the rocks were still really slick. And yeah, there was a point even where I slipped on a rock. I was actually looking at an artifact and wasn't paying attention to my footing. And I slipped on a rock and my foot fell just perfectly into a crevasse all the way up to my hip. And I don't know how I didn't break my leg. And I was very thankful. And I thought to myself at that point, okay, I need to not look around. I need to pay attention. And I need to be smart about this because everybody and their mom is going to say, oh, there's that stupid mom that went out in the backcountry by herself. And again, it wasn't about proving to anybody, but at the same time, I wanted to send an example.
It to yourself, right?
I wanted to send an example that like it was doable, like mm-hmm. and that people can do it. So, but with that being said, I promised the Canada Parks that I would say that if anybody asked, it's not for everybody. Like there is a level, just because I did it doesn't mean that everybody can do it.
And you're really fit. You're a triathlon coach and all that. And also, you know, there's a lot of things that can go wrong. Though in one sense, it's more, you got more backup here because you get to the top and there's a ranger and there's rangers along the way and all that. Yeah.
It was so cool on the entire hike. So at sheep camp, there's a ranger. Mm-hmm. At the top of the pass, there's a ranger. And go figure, there was a ranger in that group of 37 that was doing it with her son for the first time ever. So I had so many people.
Yeah.
And then there's also a ranger at Bennett. But every time I showed up, everybody would be like, hey, you're the mom with the baby. We heard all about you.
Like
everybody, it was very clear that the park service was like looking after me. Yeah. So it was very comforting.
It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth, and I'm with Heather Helsman, who you may have heard of already. She's the mom who did the Chilkoot Pass this last August with her 10-month-old baby strapped to her. And she's a triathlon coach, and her business is called Turnigan Training. Heather, I think what people would worry about is like you fall in the crack and you fall on top of your baby. And I know I used to ski with a baby, and that was always my fear is, you know, I don't want to fall on top of him or her.
Yeah.
So what did you, how did you think about that, or what did you do about that?
Yeah. So, okay. So, comical. I actually in Juneau forgot my trekking poles. And so when I got to Skagway, I had to rent a set of trekking poles because that's absolutely mandatory. If you're backpacking with a baby and you have a baby on your front and your backpack on your back, it's always important to just have more points of contact.
Right.
So that was really key, was to always have those trekking poles with me to kind of, you know, help disperse the weight too, right? Mm-hmm. So that was definitely key. And then going up the pass where it was really rocky, I actually had to put my trekking poles away earlier than I probably would have liked, because I needed to be ready to be able to crawl and to use my hands and to have my hands available. Mm-hmm.
And you had a certain kind of pack to carry the baby, so
she
wouldn't swing you around too much.
Yes, I'm not sponsored by them, but I highly recommend the Anya baby carrier. It's a full synthetic baby carrier. I've used it since my son was 4 weeks old. We hiked out to Callisto Canyon Cabin when he was 4 weeks old. And so it's full synthetic. You know, on hiking out to those cabins, you know, it's really rainy. And so you want a synthetic carrier that's not going to get wet and then get your baby wet. It's just, that would be just a down, you know, not a good situation.
I think it's good to figure out a baby carrier where the baby's not swinging around too much, too. You want it something fairly firm, close to the body, because you don't want to lose your balance.
Yeah. So that carrier I highly recommend. Mm-hmm. And it's actually pretty cool. It has a setting that you can pull out, and the carrier can become a high chair, too.
So
I used that actually in the airports when I was traveling with him, because there was no high chairs available. So it's a really good carrier.
So one of the things that I really enjoyed about this is that you heard an earlier edition of Outdoor Explorer where we were talking about, we called it Babies in the Elements. And we had Dr. Susan Beasley, pediatrician, on the show. And Susan is going to be our next guest after this interview is done to talk about her outdoor experiences and her advice. And that was helpful to you in terms of you developing your outdoor experience with your baby.
Yeah. So I listened to the podcast because I missed it air. And I took notes on it. I was on a flight back from Dillingham. I didn't have any reception. Uh-huh. So I listened to the podcast, took notes on it, and went back and I looked everything up. And I was like, I need that pediatrician. I need a pediatrician that believes in the outdoors and that believes in getting your kids outside no matter what, because that's our lifestyle. And so looked it up on my insurance and she was covered. And so that's how I got our pediatrician. And she's amazing. She's supported us in everything. You know, one of the tips she gave me, which was a great tip, was when you're backpacking, to carry two cans of bear spray. And the reason being is if you unload one can of bear spray, you still have to get out. And if you have a baby, like, you want the peace of mind to know that, like, you have a backup if heaven forbid you needed it, or just to have that safety.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, to me, it made a lot of sense, and it totally was worth it to carry two cans of extra weight. Yeah. And I didn't use any.
Passing the advice forward to whoever's listening to today, what did you learn from this experience that you didn't expect that you would like to pass on to another mom who is thinking about doing a backpacking trip with the baby?
The biggest thing I learned is that I was able to disconnect myself from all of the busy life as a parent. You know, we do a lot of play groups and I do a lot of personal things. I'm trying to multitask being a parent and starting this kids triathlon business. And it allowed us to just completely disconnect from social media or all the distractions. And it was just us. We did a ton of just like hiking and talking. He'd babble to me and I'd babble back to him.
So you get so close. Yeah.
Oh, we did. It allowed me to stop and slow down and to, you know, because we had a objective every day. We had to get to this camp, you know, and I'd be like, 3 o'clock and I'd already be almost there and be like, well, heck, this is a nice field. Let's play, you know? Yeah. And I'd get him out and I'd get him in his Oki wear rain suit and he'd crawl around and he'd be exploring. And we never take time for that because we're always like on a time schedule and got to get to the next thing, you know? Right. So that was so special to have those bonding moments and every night in the tent to just have playtime and to cuddle. It was just so nice. Yeah. We do not co-sleep at home, so it was hard getting back to society. Yeah. So it was hard putting him. I will admit, the first night I was home, I slept in the crib with him.
Oh, really?
Because he cried, and I just couldn't handle being separated from him.
After all that time together, it's hard to get home back to civilization.
Oh, it really is.
Well, any advice for things that maybe didn't go exactly the way you wanted, or that like, or this things you do to be certain, hey, do this to make sure you have a good trip, or is it just easier than you would think?
Yeah, you know, I really had a great trip, and I expected some of the barriers, you know, with things getting tough, and I think that's why it made it easy, because I knew that it was going to be difficult putting up a tent while having a kid on your back, you know. Because you had to keep them safe, you know, and making food and just never getting a break. Like, I knew that was going to be hard. So one thing I did do to prepare for this trip by myself was I actually, 2 weeks before this trip, I hiked the Kasugi Ridge with a couple, my two good friends, Rachel and Jake Gano, and their baby. And I said, please don't help me. I want to do it completely by myself, but I want you guys to be here, you know? Yeah. And we did actually...
Confidence builder.
Yeah. And just a safety check, you know? And we did actually more miles. We did 2 nights, 3 days. So it was harder, the Kasugi Ridge was. And
up at Denali State Park.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was harder, and it allowed me to know that, like, I can do this. That's not a problem. It was... The only thing that was going to be the struggle was the bears. The two people that were killed this spring, I was friends with both of them. So for me, it was hard, you know, to not ignore it. And
I hear you. Well, it sounds like an amazing experience and something that you'll always treasure, and probably you're going to have a lot more experiences like
that. Absolutely, yeah.
This little guy is going to get bigger and bigger and do more and more great things.
Yeah, I think about it, and I feel bad for our second child because he will never get this experience because the fact is dad's going to have to come or somebody else is going to have to come because I don't think carrying two and all the gear is possible.
Never say never.
Hey, maybe it's a challenge.
If anyone can do it, you can. Thanks, Heather Helzer. Really, really fun experience, and I agree with you. Everybody should try it if they can. Heather's a triathlon coach. She has Turnagain training, and she hiked with her baby over the Chilkoot Pass this summer. Thanks so much for being here, Heather.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, please stay tuned as Outdoor Explorer continues. Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Woolforth, and today we're talking about backcountry babies, taking your young one backpacking or boating or however you want to get into the backcountry. And in this segment, we're going to do a little validation that this is actually not such a crazy idea with a professional, a doctor who is also a mom and has done this with her kids, Dr. Susan Beasley. She's a pediatrician with Anchorage Pediatric Group. Thanks for being here, Susan.
Thank you.
And you were on the show before to talk about taking your babies out in the cold.
Right.
So we've got you. You're our go-to person for extreme baby activities. taking a baby backpacking is, you know, more practical than you would think. And it sounds like you've done quite a bit of it yourself.
I have over the years. Yeah.
So it's part of the issue is just having a carrying capacity to be able to carry this baby.
Right.
Once you're in camp, it's pretty easy, right? Because they can't get around too fast as long as you can keep track of where they are.
Sure. Yeah, it depends on the age for the challenges that come up in camp.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So what kinds of trips have you done and what kinds of trips are you doing with your... Well, you have three, right?
Right.
What are their ages?
I've got 3 kids, 8, 5, and 3 now. The first backpacking trip that I did was when we were still living in California right after my son... Well, I guess he wasn't just born. He was 6 months old and we went on a... 3-day trip into the Sierra in California. And that was great. That, you know, we carried him and then also our own bags. And then as we've gotten more kids and a growing family, we've done several adventures, some of them still backpacking. But what we found is that as we get more kids and heavier children, we've converted to more assisted backcountry trips, whether that's accessing the backcountry with a kayak or pack raft or bikes, just helping us get our children and our stuff to a different location that then we can explore from as a base camp.
Yeah, yeah. And because in a way, the easy, I mean, when you're young couple and then you have a kid, you might think, oh my gosh, all of our fun is over, you know, we're not gonna be able to do our back. But then you find out, well, actually they're super portable when they're little because they're so small.
Right.
As they get bigger, then it gets a little harder.
Right.
Because once they're walking on their own, then you have to slow down the pace quite a bit.
I think you have to slow down the pace quite a bit, no matter what stage you're mm-hmm. in, because you might think, sure, I've just got this 10-pound child, or probably your child's going to be a little heavier by the time uh-huh. you're going in the backcountry, but still, very portable. But they have their own opinions, and they still do need you to right. respect and pay attention to their cues. And so you slow it down, but that doesn't interrupt the fun. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you know, parents will be amazed at how joyful it is just to experience the wilderness and the backcountry through their children's eyes and see it in a new way that they may have never, since they were own the children themselves, yeah. seen it since.
Yeah, I think, I know it's totally true. And you find that they are exciting and they're excited and that's contagious. And if they get bored, you are being creative and you're sort of adding to that. And even that entertaining the kid adds a little bit to the experience.
Right. You know, for older kids, I feel like you can play lots of games and, mm-hmm. You know, pretend that you're scientists and look for different things in nature to observe. And or you can make a scavenger hunt or, you know, try to discover a rainbow in the forest, or there's all sorts of different creative games you can use for motivation to keep the kids interested and mm-hmm. and also moving forward.
I just remember my oldest son always wanted to make a museum. Every time we came to a campsite, yeah. he'd find rocks and sticks and make a little museum, and then we'd go and look at it. Or my daughter was always telling us stories about the imaginary animals, and it makes actually those trips are so much more memorable than the ones where we're just sort of going out and hiking and doing, you know, right. being boring adults.
Well, I think that the adventure is in the journey, and mm-hmm. you have to be comfortable and excited about that, because it won't be the trip where you're with your friend and you're going to bag a peak or, you know, go quickly or arrive at, you know, a goal. It's much more about enjoying the experience and helping your children love what you love about the wilderness, and also using it as a really immense learning opportunity, both for specific natural phenomenon that you can talk about and learn about, but also just the creative play and imagination mm-hmm. that you can get in the natural world that's harder to achieve in a home. Or
yeah, there's no distractions, and you're connecting with your kids in a really deep way, because there's even though your survival may not be at risk, that's sort of the world you're in is a teamwork world of, right. of getting through the challenge.
Right.
As they get a little older, when they're younger, they're part of the challenge.
Right. Back to the basics.
Right.
Experience.
Right. All right. So that's part of the excitement part of it. What are some of the issues that you'd be concerned about or want to prepare that are different with a little one?
I think the primary one that I think about is just that you have much higher exposure when you take children into the backcountry. And you just need to be aware of that. You know, if you're going out with friends and everybody's an adult and can mostly take care of themselves, then you might be willing to take on a different level of exposure or risk. But if you're taking children, you need to just be very aware of, you know, what is your out option? And, you know, the technology has increased so much in the past couple decades that now we have ways that, you know, people can ask for help from the backcountry when needed. And especially if you're going on a solo trip with a child or your children, I think it would be a good idea to have that ability. Because let's say, you know, you're a very accomplished outdoors
communication
person.
Ability.
Yeah, mm-hmm. communication ability. Even the most accomplished person might break a leg.
Right, and then you're out there with a baby.
And then you're there sort of yeah. solo. And so mm-hmm. it'd be good to have a way to ask for help or get some aid. And other than that, there are some other challenges that kids may be more prone to, you know, we can talk about medical things like ingestions, exposures.
Your baby's choking on something,
right.
Or
yeah, especially
by
the young
stung
ones.
By an insect or whatever. Yeah,
camp can be sort of hazardous sometimes. We used to, on that first trip I was mentioning with that younger child, we would actually put his pacifier in when we got to camp, even though he almost never used it otherwise, just because it was a barrier for not putting rocks and sticks and, you know, other things that he found on the ground mm-hmm. in his mouth, and that worked pretty well.
Yeah, keeping track of a baby and when you're outdoors and there's no boundaries around you is really important. And we found as a family you could stick a baby in the tent and zip it up, and they'd
right.
be pretty happy crawling around. When we were doing boating trips on a motorboat, we'd bring a little portable crib. So we had a lot of kiddos, and after a while you realize you can be paying attention to one and the other one can get in trouble while you're looking at this one. So you need to have some kind of containment.
Exactly.
If you've got multiple kids.
Right. Especially if there is a natural, you know, challenge around you, like there is somewhere that they could go down a
water,
an embankment or mm-hmm. right. If you're next to a stream or a lake. So just being aware of your child's developmental readiness or, level and mm-hmm. what they could get into while you're setting up a tent. If there's two adults or more, then one person can just be entirely supervising the child or the children while the other one's taking care of camp tasks.
Right. How did you deal with diapers when you were when you were traveling with a baby? Because, I mean, it's like...
It's tricky.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's positives and negatives to trying to go paper versus cloth diapers is the first question.
Either way, you're hauling some nasty stuff
I know,
around.
Exactly. Either way, you're packing something out.
Yeah.
In an ideal world, I think you would take cloth diapers, not very many of them, and then, you know, dump the stool, assuming it's fairly formed, into mm-hmm. whatever latrine you've dug for yourself, and then do an away-from-the-water-source rinse of that diaper and dry it out on a hot, sunny day. Mm-hmm. That's not often our reality in Alaska.
Yeah.
And so most of our outings, we've taken paper diapers and tried mm-hmm. to still dump whatever poop we can, scrape it into the latrine, and then pack out the paper diapers.
Yeah, yeah. And so part of this is planning and thinking about your carrying capacity. What can you
right.
take? How are you going to do this?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Because, I mean, I believe there's an inverse relationship between the size of the person and how much gear you need to take. If it's a baby,
true.
You're like loaded down with a million things.
Right.
So what about, I mean, if you're nursing and for this, you have to be a female, a dad is not going to, then you've got your food supply along with you.
That's convenient.
Yeah. But if you're doing bottles or if you're doing sort of a little bit older and you're into baby food, then you've got sort of another set of considerations, especially with, you know, if you're trying to keep bottles sterile and that sort of thing, that seems like that would be tough.
Right. I think you could take, powder formula
mm-hmm.
and then just mix it up with your treated water and then later you can do just a warm soapy water rinse of the bottles. You don't have to sterilize them.
Yeah.
And then for food, really, I think in general and especially in the backcountry, the babies can eat a modified version of what you're eating as long as the texture is soft enough that it's not a choking hazard.
Yeah, and it's something you get used to at home, right? You're not going to
yeah.
start a lot of new practices when you're out traveling.
No, and actually, I'm glad you mentioned that because if you do have a young child in the backcountry, you wouldn't want to give them anything new while you're out.
Right.
Just because, again, you're away from any sort of medical care and you wouldn't want to be confronting a potential allergic reaction in that sort of an exposed environment.
Yeah. I'm just recalling now that when we do these trips, we would sometimes boil, and I guess maybe we didn't need to, but we would tend to sterilize bottles and nipples and stuff. But then you've got this boiled water that's really ready to be used for whatever you want, as long as it's, you know, already cleaned it. So,
true.
All right. We're talking about taking babies to the backcountry and outdoor explore. And my guest right now is Dr. Susan Beasley, who's done this plenty of times, and she's a pediatrician here in Anchorage. You know, the nightmare things that you worry about are like anaphylaxis if a kiddo is stung by a bee or something. We had a history of that in my family, so we would take an EpiPen, even mm-hmm. though we'd never had any record of it with the kids. We just thought, like, if we're out there and that happens, you know, it's a catastrophe unless you're prepared. And I don't, you know, our doctor was okay with just prescribing that, and we never had to use it. Let's talk a little bit about those first aid and preparation things that
sure.
where you'd want to be sort of have an extra level of preparation if you're taking a young one.
Right. I think an EpiPen's a good consideration. We've done the same thing. My kids don't have any significant allergies, but I do take an EpiPen with us, and I've prescribed it to a number of families for the same exact reason. So clearly, if there's any history of true allergy in your children, then that's a good idea. And then you can, you know, argue the pros and cons of taking it if there have never been an allergy.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I think really some simple things that could be very useful. I would always take ibuprofen and Benadryl. However, that gets a little tricky because you don't want to carry a lot of weight.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I do, and I'd encourage everybody to talk to their own doctors about this to make sure the dose is appropriate, but I take actual tablets, and then you can often break a tablet in half and have a fairly accurate dose for most kids. We're not talking about the youngest infants, but, you know, like a one-year-old is often about 10 kilos, 22 pounds, and the appropriate dose for ibuprofen would be half of a tablet, and that mm-hmm. could be crushed and given in a small bite of something that they'll eat. So that avoids having to take liquid medicines, and it's about the same for Benadryl. And again, I don't want anybody to take that
right.
as the dose that they should give their child, but it's worth talking to
if you're doing
your
well-child visit and you're
right.
planning to do some trips, say, hey, this is what we have in mind.
Is yeah. there a convenient dose mm-hmm. that is an increment or an easy division of an already, you know, prepared tablet instead of having to lug multiple bottles of liquid medication that would weigh you down?
Mm-hmm.
I think another thing that everybody should take is a small tube of super glue. You know, more and more
yeah.
with minor lacerations, even if you go into the emergency room, you're getting glued these days.
Wow.
And it's fairly effective. You know, you'd want to do a good clean, which actually, you know, a fresh running source of water, just irrigation, stick the injured part into the fresh running water to get a good clean, and then let it dry, and then you just sort of approximate it and glue it, and that works pretty well. Anything that's deep or cuts into muscle or you know, any ligaments or tendons would obviously need a more a much more significant repair.
That's a reason to get out of there.
Minor lacerations, yeah. super glue does great.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, you're going to want to sunblock, bug spray. I like to take Vaseline with me because it's sort of a multi-purpose salve, if you will.
Mm.
Works for diaper rashes, also for sunburns or minor abrasions, just a skin protectant, chapped lips, whatever. You can just stick a little bit on there. And then I would take tape and then a small scissors and tweezers just for, you know, whatever comes
yeah.
up. Those can be useful items. And then I would take a small either tube or bar of biodegradable soap.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, especially if you are doing some of that like poop scraping into the latrine, you want to be able to clean your hands and your baby's
yeah.
hands.
This is a point that Paul Tworduk made with us, APU professors, that what's your most important health thing to do when you're out camping? Wash your hands.
Of course. Right.
You got to be clean. It's like no different out there
than
anywhere
else. It's true
at home,
and it's yeah. also true in the wilderness.
Right.
Yeah. So, I think those are the main things
mm-hmm.
that I would take.
That's not too much.
Not too much, and fairly lightweight.
Yeah. The other hazard that I think is maybe for somebody new might not be something they'd anticipate is burns.
Right.
Kiddos can pull stuff off of a camp table or wherever it is, a hot cup of coffee or whatever, or fall into a campfire. And so kind of being aware of those kinds of hazards is important.
Absolutely.
And those can be really, really bad.
Right.
Yeah. But so you didn't mention burn cream or anything like that.
Well, I think you can do okay with just Vaseline if you needed to, and then maybe some antibiotic ointment.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that if you have a
Neosporin,
significant
burn, that kind of thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That you're going to want to get out.
That's
probably
what you have your sat phone for. It's
yeah,
like if it's really,
if it's a significant burn. And you may think about just what you do. You may choose to not make a campfire. Or, you know, cook away from the campsite. Well, you're probably doing that anyway in Alaska,
mm-hmm.
but just cook away from where the children are so that you don't have that increased risk of burn.
Yeah. And then keeping your kiddo warm and dry,
mm-hmm.
they could get hypothermia just like we do.
Right.
And maybe a little quicker because they've got more surface area for their amount of mass, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. They're more vulnerable to all of the exposures than you are.
Right. Which is kind of just checking in with them regularly and making sure that they're dry. I mean, I guess they'll cry if they're unhappy.
Well, sure. I mean, they do tell you.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to you know, evaluate how they're feeling, what their energy level is, make sure they're staying hydrated, can check in with their core body temperature by putting your fingers on the back of their necks, because noses and fingers and toes can feel cold, but still, you know, they can be okay. But you do want to have some reserve sets of dry clothing. I would recommend, you know, you have at least three sets of clothing, a hiking set, an eating set, and a sleeping set. And, you know, you can let the eating one get all covered in food and then you just put them in your bear bags.
Mm-hmm.
The hiking can get dirty and wet every day and then you can try to dry them out at night. But then once you're in camp, you really want to change them into dry clothing and then reserve those, you know, as
for when you're in the tent.
Exactly.
You're really
you really want to try to keep those dry and then always bring extra socks and extra hat and gloves.
That's a great idea. I'd never heard that one before.
Another thing that we've done is, you know, if you don't want to take a, for a little child, if you don't want another sleeping bag, I mean, some people put them in with them and that works fine. But you can also use an adult puffy coat. You know, just tie off the arms and zip it up. And if it's a pretty warm puffy coat, that's not a bad option for a little sleeping bag.
Yeah, neat.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit before we got started about when the kiddos are getting a little bit bigger and less portable, moving to a base camp or a cabin thing can be really good. And then you've got this ability to dry stuff. And my family, when my kids, a long time ago when my kids were young, we would do these Prince William Sound trips and camp for 3 days and then do a cabin for a couple of days. Mm-hmm. Because after 3 days, everything's wet. Everybody's a little miserable. You're really dirty. You get to a cabin, you can have a sponge bath and dry stuff out and, you know, sleep on a hard bunk. And that's a really good way to do it. Another way you were mentioning is just make a base camp and stay there and do day trips from there.
I'm big fans of both of those options. We're so lucky in Alaska to have such an awesome system of state park cabins and also a lot of privately run yurts and cabins that are rustic and very much in the wilderness. And we've done lots of those trips and they're great, you know, because you can still access beautiful backcountry, but it's just a lot more sort of insurance that everybody's going to be able to stay dry and warm. And kids love cabins too. I mean, the cabin in and of itself is just a world of fun and exploration and adventure. So we've done a lot of those. And I love base camps too. I think, you know, getting in, you know, whether it's 1 or 3 miles to a spot that you can then set up tents for a couple days and then explore from there. That's incredibly fun because then the explorations can be as much or as little as fits your family, or it can even be a couple different groups exploring. And
becomes very spontaneous and sort of easy.
And it's
easy.
Not weighted down.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to carry all the food and everything. And so it can be just sort of more footloose and fancy free.
Yeah.
And child directed too.
Mm-hmm.
You can get them involved. And I think that's also an important piece as your kids get older is this is not only, you know, just a fun family adventure. It's also a real learning opportunity for wilderness skills and getting them involved and allowing children to take responsibility for certain tasks around camp. And I think that gives them a lot of pride and sense of accomplishment when they can succeed at that.
Yeah, I think probably the thing that I think of is sort of the most Alaskan sort of our experiences and sort of most rewarding was being able to go out in the sound and like let a kid say, well, which island do you want to land on? You know, and you land on some island, they explore it and it's pretty safe. Obviously a little bit older, but that kind of letting the kid be a leader, I think is really important and be a team member and not sort of be, you're not there to serve them. You're there as a team.
Right. And I mean, there's always challenges that come up when you're in the backcountry and in the wilderness. And I think helping children navigate that in that setting is helpful then in the rest of their lives in terms of cultivating skills of perseverance and resiliency and grit and determination and follow through. You know, I could talk about that forever, but I think it's just incredibly valuable and then applicable to in so many ways.
Part of which is not dragging them around beyond their point of misery because
well,
then they just won't want to do it anymore.
Right. Right. There's a fine line between pushing a child to the point where they're practicing, you know, their skills of being strong and showing their grit, but then also really wanting to remain sensitive that they are a very, you know, a young body and still vulnerable and still needs a lot of support and understanding from you when they feel like they're hitting their limit.
Yeah. Perfect. Well, thanks, Susan. Susan Beasley is a pediatrician with the Anchorage Pediatric Group and a mom who's done a lot of great outdoor trips. Thanks so much for being with us, Susan.
Oh, it's been a pleasure.
Well, stay with us. We're going to talk to another mom who has done a backpacking trip with a baby and learn about her experience on the Resurrection Pass Trail. So stay with us as Outdoor Explorer continues.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes Store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Woolforth, and we're talking about babes in the woods, taking babies in the backcountry. And now I have a guest who is a young mother, at least compared to me, she's pretty young. And she, Melissa Knight, has a daughter, Layla. And they recently did the Resurrection Pass Trail and have done some other stuff. And the Resurrection Pass trip was not totally solo, but was sort of solo, right?
Right. Yeah, yeah. So that trip, you know, has been a bucket list trip of mine since I've lived in Alaska, and just never really made it happen. And, uh-huh. and really, prior to being a mom, I was always working full time. So it's, you know, especially in the summer, I worked seasonal jobs for a long time. Uh-huh. So it's like just a hard thing to make happen yeah. for multi days. But a friend of mine in Seward, Cindy, she gave me a call and said, like, hey, I've got these cabins, you know, if you want to join me, you can. I don't think that she expected that I would jump on it, really. Uh-huh. and I might have actually kind of prompted the invite. So, I joined her, and she actually had the cabins booked for the through hike. So it was, you know, pretty easy.
Yeah, and it's such a Resurrection Pass Trail from Cooper Landing to Hope is so nice because it has those cabins right along the way, and it's
absolutely
really well developed trail, and so yeah. good place to start, I think.
Absolutely, it really was, and we went from Hope to Cooper Landing, mm-hmm. and I've started in Cooper Landing several times and gone to a lot of the different cabins along there, but it really is a well developed trail. I mean, there's not a lot of technical aspect to it, which mm-hmm. is really nice, especially if you're carrying a little one, and having her on my front is, you know, there's
so
that,
this is like you've got a backpack on the back and a baby on the front.
Right.
And she was like just about a year old then or about?
Yeah, this was really just a couple weeks ago. So
oh, okay.
She was 15 months old. Uh-huh. And the day before I left for the trip, we went to our pediatric appointment. I'm mm-hmm. like, well, I'll know exactly how much she weighs.
Right, right.
So yeah, 22 pounds. That was probably the most challenging aspect of the trip was
heavy
her
weight, yeah.
on my front and the weight of her pulling forward on my mm-hmm. shoulders because mm-hmm. you can't put that all on your hips like you can your backpack.
Yeah.
So
did you have anything you were nervous about sort of just taking your baby out on this 40-mile hike?
Yeah, not really. I'm trying to think of, I think that for me, it was just a matter of wanting to be as prepared as I possibly could. And I definitely spent more time preparing for this trip than I have any other backpacking trip, just because it is a little bit different. And I really wanted to get the weight of my backpack down as much as I can. So I really, really went on like an ultralight and like weighed things out and said, all right, which one is lighter between these two? And even with her diapers, I tried to find the lightest weight, most compact diaper. Mm-hmm. That I could. It's really just thinking it through and just took a little bit more time. But as far as worries, I would say that probably bears, you know, just this bear safety is kind of the biggest one, especially just being solo and I've got to take care of this little
yeah.
human, you know.
Yeah.
So
did you run into anything that was like more difficult or that was like you thought, well, I wish I'd thought about that or?
You know, I would say what was more, I definitely the weight on my shoulders was more difficult than I expected it
yeah.
that it would be, you know, all that pulling
forward.
Because
you're carrying, I mean, you're probably a 30 or 40 pound pack
yeah.
plus a 22 pound baby. That
yeah.
turns into a really lot of weight.
Yeah, yeah. It was a 40 pound pack. And I was actually surprised that For me, like the weight, the total weight I was carrying wasn't bad on my legs at all. That's not where I felt it. It was really just the shoulders of that forward movement. So mm-hmm. that, I don't know if there's something in the future that I can work on. I definitely think there's kind of a window of opportunity to, as far as their size, that you can pull that off.
By next summer, she's probably going to be
yeah, too big. Yeah, that might be the needing a partner. But uh-huh. we'll see. I mean, if I continue to just stay fit and train, I had been doing a lot of, or had upped my fitness. Working out a little bit before that, especially mm-hmm. in the leg strength, so that helped a lot.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we did run into one bear, and thankfully that was a point on the trail that I'd crossed paths with my friend. She was bike packing, and so we kind of crossed each other sometimes on the trail, but we were mostly independent, and then met at the cabin.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so there was bear just along the river, and so we were allowed, and he ran off, and uh-huh. it was all good.
That's what usually happens, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It was a black bear. So yeah, but we had, and I had my dog with me too, which I don't know, you know, if my dog really would help me all that much if I came into a situation with a bear, but I always just feel more comforted when he's there
yeah.
making noise with his bell and everything.
So you were saying that she just this last weekend began walking.
Right.
So, but she was crawling a lot, I'm sure.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
How did that affect your time in camp? I mean, sort of you got to be aware of where she is all the time and really on top of things, right? Because
right.
it's not like your kid-proof environment at home where you've taken care of all those
right.
issues.
Right, yeah. You get really creative. So yeah, you do have to be aware. And if I was 100% alone, if I didn't have a friend meeting me at the cabin, it definitely adds another challenge because it's like, all right, you go to the bathroom, you mm-hmm. you know, go fetch water, you're going to put your kid on your back. So that soft structured carrier is great for that. You know, I was very thankful that my friend was just loved playing with her. But as far as childproofing in the cabin, yeah, you got to think about that. Luckily, there's not a lot of little things. You just plan for them to get dirty and crawl around in the dirt, and they find things, and, you know, they'll experiment with leaves and sticks and everything
yeah.
and the mouth, and you just hope that it's not a rock and
right.
keep an eye on them. You know, and one of the nights we got a fire going, and so we got creative with that because I was like, oh man, I don't want her to just crawl right to it. And so there's the benches around the tables that we just put around the fire. So
okay. Make
you,
a little barrier.
You get creative.
Sure.
Yeah. And really that opportunity for them to just to explore is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
We took a break right in the pass, Resurrection Pass, and I was eating my snack or lunch, and I turned over and she's eating something, and I'm like, oh shoot. And I realized it was berries, like on her own, like nobody showed her or told uh-huh. her that was edible. And she started picking crowberries all by herself, and she's like, this is the greatest. So
uh-huh.
I've got a awesome little video of
I
that
bet
too.
You got some good pictures. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So did you feel like pretty quickly like she was enjoying it, because she's getting so much attention, she's getting so much closeness with you and all these new things? Could you really pick up her
yeah.
her impressions?
Oh yeah, I think that she had a great time. I mean, you know, the length of time in the pack can be kind of challenging.
Yeah.
Because
you've got to get to the cabin. It's not like you can just say, we're stopping now.
Right, yeah. And we got a kind of a late start on the day.
Always happens.
Yeah, always happens, especially with a kid. So we didn't, like the first day, we didn't hit the trail until like 1:45. And I had 11 and a half miles to go to get to the first cabin. And I estimated.
It's uphill too.
Yes, yeah, that one was uphill. Yeah, so that was really the hardest day because it was uphill, 11 and a half miles, and it's the first day you're getting mm-hmm. yourself broken in. And so I estimated it would take about 6 hours, 5 or 6, and it definitely took a little over 6. And we took one break in there, just let her out, let her crawl around. But, I mean, yeah, we just kind of had to go. There was times that she, you know, did get fussy, and we'd sing songs, and I'd make funny faces and make noises. And so it's just kind of great to have that opportunity. And I think that it also teaches her patience too, of like, you know, she's at that age where she's going to whine and fuss to get what she wants. And I didn't have that option.
Exactly.
So it's
kind of
like,
yeah,
you got to just be patient, and naps were good too.
Yeah. It's Outdoor Explorer. We're talking about taking babies in the backcountry. And with me today is Melissa Knight, who just recently did the Resurrection Pass Trail with her 16-month-old Layla. I would think that first day on the trail, when you're doing 11 miles, it's getting dark, it's probably kind of wet, it's probably kind of cold, the baby's fussing, you're finding out these this pack plus baby is heavier than you thought. At some point on that night, I would be thinking, well, maybe this wasn't such a great idea.
You know, there's definitely some truth in that. You know, I'd like to be like, oh, no, there was never a doubt. But I definitely, when I got to that cabin that first night, I definitely had thoughts of like, oh, wow, can I do this? I mean, my shoulders were hurting pretty bad. I mean, I could hardly lift them, but I just, they had been in the same position with the same weight for 6 hours. So thankfully, you know, we had a fairly, was it a good night? Actually, it wasn't a good night rest.
Yeah, what happened?
That was another challenge. So I had
You've already got the amnesia you get after a trip where you think only remember the good stuff.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Well, there's like mom amnesia, you know, you forget all the bad stuff. And I think that's God's grace.
Yeah, absolutely.
but yeah, I mean, that first night I was like, well, I mean, worst case scenario, I can turn around and go back out the same way that I came. We had a car at either end, so we had that option.
So was she having trouble getting down to sleep or what was the
issue? So I had planned that we would share a sleeping bag. I actually, this summer, purchased a new sleeping bag, an extra wide, got an extra wide pad. And we don't co-sleep at home. And so I think that was kind of the challenge is she's used to being in her crib and she rolls and tosses and crawls around a lot until she falls asleep. And so we both just kind of had to get used to that. I think there were several times where I woke up and I was like, oh, what position is she in? Where is she? And so I'd reach over to feel where she was because it was dark. And then I'd end up waking her up. Oh. And so then by the second night, I was like, you know, I'll trust that she's fine. I put an extra down jacket against the wall. You know, those cabins are great with the arrangements and she slept much better. So yeah, by the second and third night, everything was good.
It's a learning experience.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think I just had to go into it knowing that stuff like that's going to happen. So
what were you doing for her food?
So for food, I feel like that was an area that I probably could have done a little bit better on. We've done baby-led weaning from the start, where basically she just eats whatever we're making and, you know, make softer stuff, steamed veggies, stuff like that. But since I was going ultralight, I was doing backpacker meals for myself, and she's pretty good eater. She'll kind of eat anything, but she wasn't really into the backpacker meals.
The freeze-dried envelopes.
Yeah, the freeze-dried ones. And so she ate a lot of Clif Bars.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So I'd say that she ate a whole Clif Bar every day, you know, just herself. And, what else did I bring? There's a couple different things that I wish that I would have brought. There's those little freeze-dried yogurt drops that would have been great, but I brought Cheerios and, just a lot of bars that are softer that I could break up her and give her pieces of. You know, I didn't have, you know, fresh fruit, fresh vegetables, anything like that. But
it's only for a few days.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what, that's kind of how I looked at it. Mm-hmm. Is just a couple days, we'll make it. As long as I have some stuff that she'll eat, you know, that's kind of the sacrifice you make for yourself too when you're backpacking.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it worked out. It worked out pretty good. You know, the one downside about a lot of those freeze-dried meals is they're high sodium. So I just tried to pick the lowest sodium ones because I know that's not great for little ones. So, yeah.
I've always felt about those meals that they taste great at the end of a long day of hiking, but you would never eat them in town, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
If you try to eat that stuff in town, you'd say, oh, this is awful.
Yeah, I agree.
Probably the baby feels the same way.
Right,
like, what are you doing, Mom?
And she didn't do the work. She just went for a ride all day, right? So it doesn't have
absolutely.
That perspective.
So I think one thing that happens to people who have enjoyed the Alaska outdoors is that then they start to have a family and then they think, well, I can't really do what I like doing anymore. Mm. And you got to that point and you decided to keep going. Did you have any of those doubts when you were pregnant and you were sort of, you know, thinking about your family and everything and what's this going to mean for our lifestyle?
Yeah. You know, I would say like the biggest challenge for me with that transition and life changing was more to do with my work, my career. I worked in the maritime industry. So for the last 4 years, I was the captain of a research boat down in Seward for Kenai Fjords National Park. And so kind of a different job.
That's a cool job.
Yeah, very cool. I love it. I mean, outdoors. I mean, that was my life. You know, that's why I'm just like, all right, we're going to make this happen because it's just every aspect, you know, recreational and work for me was very much outdoors. And so that was a bigger transition just for myself was that job, I was gone for 4 to 10 days at a time and just not conducive to family life. I hope that, you know, maybe someday when kids are older, I can get back into that. And mm-hmm. in the meantime, I've had an opportunity to do just some short-term relief work. So that was, for me personally, you know, more of a
big
transition.
Sacrifice,
yeah, big change. And so it's kind of like, all right, well, now what? And
right.
So it's definitely left this place where I have an opportunity to explore new things and hopefully get into new things. And I guess as it relates to my family, you know, as far as outdoor activities, you know, it's not that you can't do them anymore. It's just going to be different. You know, I'm finding that activities that are great to do with little one now are biking with a trailer,
yeah.
and, you know, running with them in a stroller and mm-hmm. skiing. It was so much fun pulling her in, you know, with the chariot on skis.
Yeah,
in the
I remember
winter.
One of my daughters, I'd be skiing along and she'd be yelling, faster, faster. Faster, Daddy.
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe that's how we'll get to this winter now that she'll probably be starting to talk. Yeah. So, so you just modify it. And, you know, and I grew up with a family that did things together outside.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I don't really, it wasn't a big transition for me mentally because that's just what my family did from a young age. You know, we had a little fishing boat. This was in Idaho. Mm-hmm. And we'd go out on lakes and we'd go camping together. We'd go hunting together. Mm-hmm. I mean, from a really young age, like they would just pack us along. And so now
you're just passing it down.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's really important to me.
Yeah. So any advice you'd have to other moms or dads who are thinking about doing some more challenging backcountry stuff with their kids? I mean, I think we all will go do like a day hike up in Glen Alps or something. But to do a multi-day trip is maybe a little bit more daunting when you've got a little person, at least if you haven't tried it yet.
Yeah. You know, I encourage people to challenge themselves a little bit. I know that there is that fine balance of like, all right, is the extra effort going to be worth it for my little one and for me? You know, because it's kind of like if it's just misery the whole time, then it's not worth it. And so, you know, I think that's becomes a mental roadblock for some people. But I think that if you just go into it expecting that things are not going to go as planned and spend as much time as you can preparing for different outcomes, you know, I think that would be my advice and to just do it,
just
you
do
know,
it. Yeah.
and have a backup plan, have an out. I mean, mm-hmm. for Resurrection Pass, I knew that like I could go in one night and I could turn around and come back. And I knew if I got to the second cabin at Devil's Pass, I could take that route out to Devil's Pass Trailhead and be out mm-hmm. the next day. And then by the time I got to third cabin, we're there, you know, yeah. it's just one more day out. And I think that, depending on what your lifestyle is, you know, I really think of it as like I'm doing this for my kids as well, mm-hmm. like to set the example, to role model to them, like just a healthy lifestyle, being outside and exercising.
Yeah, great. Yeah. And good for you, Melissa. Melissa Knight is a new mom, took her daughter Layla on the Resurrection Pass Trail. It's been a fun hour and really encouraging. And thanks for coming in, Melissa.
Yeah, thank you so much, Charles. Appreciate it.
That's all for today's show on Outdoor Explorer. Eric Bork is our producer. Hannah Duro is our assistant producer. Lined up a great guest today. My name is Charles Wolfworth. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal the Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.